fighting for America.
This is the day the Lord has made. Let us rejoice and be glad. We rejoice that our new members and families are here. We will welcome them. We're glad and humbled to begin anew as servants of the people's house.
Fighting for Idaho.
Would you be willing to advocate for a tax increase to improve the school budget situation?
I will tell you that I am interested in exploring every opportunity for increased revenue for our schools.
Fighting for you.
Kevin, you're an excellent resource and advocate for gun rights. And you help people hear these issues and understand them and get the word out.
Boise's Mr. Right, Kevin Miller in the Morning, winner of the 2014 Marconi Radio Award on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
And good morning. Thank you all for joining us. A privilege and honor to be with you. K. Millie in the Morning at 580 KIDO. One big story that we will get to, and it's kind of tough for me because some people say, well, you just don't like this guy. And, you know, I'm like a lot of folks. I'm disappointed in him. But, look, he's his own man, and if you don't believe that, he'll tell you that. That's Congressman Raul Labrador, who voted yesterday for John Boehner. And we have a poll at 580 KIDO. Did Labrador do the right thing? Did Congressman Labrador do the right thing? And we've had people voting on it last night. I'd put it up last night when I saw that. I saw your reaction to it on Facebook and social media. And basically, you go to our website, and under it, did Labrador do the right thing? And you can vote this way. Yes, we love Speaker Boehner. He's the best ever. No, Labrador made the wrong move. I would have voted for Brian Harsin, or my personal indulgence, I would have voted for Kay Milley. So, by the way, you can go there, vote all day long. Right now, 89% of you have said that Labrador made the wrong move, right, and I'm kind of tied with Speaker Boehner for second. And we will talk about that. I think we expected a little more of the congressman, but he is his own man. But we will get to that. That's at 580kido.com. With us now is a young man that I have been had the privilege of interviewing for many, many years, even when I was a baby talk show host, now going on my 20th year in New Hampshire. And that is Larry Pratt from Gun Owners of America. Larry, you're the one constant in an ever-changing media universe. Good morning, sir.
Well, good morning. Nice to be described that way.
Well, I mean, you've seen a lot of things in your day. We've had some great victories on the Supreme Court when it comes to gun rights and gun ownership, and you've been at the forefront of that to make sure that our Second Amendment is strong. And you'd think in a country where it is the Second Amendment, we wouldn't have to worry about it. But that's not the case.
Well, one reason it was written down is because it was perceived that there would always be threats to the various liberties of the people, hence the Bill of Rights that we enjoy as part of our Constitution, the Second Amendment being part of that. The founders understood that government is constantly seeking to expand, to control. There's a tendency to tyranny, even among good people. They just think that they know better than the rest of us. And that's why we have a Second Amendment, which is to provide the tangible means to remind those that we've extended some of our power to them to administer on our behalf, that doesn't belong to you, bud. And if you start thinking that it does, we can take it back.
Well, and certainly we need to do that now more than ever. But let's get to the big case on this, these protests, the violence against the police. It started off in Ferguson. Now it's trickled to New York and other places. Is this open season on the cops?
Well, I certainly am glad I have another line of work because putting that badge on makes you a target. And these guys and gals are out on the front line. And when there is chatter among the chattering class, certainly Al Sharpton being one of the more prominent in that regard, that directs dislike to the police. I mean, give me a break. I'm certainly not somebody who's going to give a rogue officer a pass, and I want to come down on them like a ton of bricks. Because they have such an important position, when they abuse it, they really need to be dealt with severely. But we're talking about, as you put it, open season on cops. That this dirtbag was encouraged to travel to New York City by what he didn't need a whole lot of encouragement, and his religion sort of inclined him to hate people that weren't other Muslims. So he was sort of pre-programmed, if you will. And in that environment, he hears people talking about how the police have been a problem for our community all these years. So he travels to New York, and he finds a couple that aren't looking at him. They were actually surveilling for another suspected crime scene. That's why they were in that patrol car where they were, when they were. And he killed them right on the spot. That I don't know that that would have necessarily happened had there not been the encouragement perceived by the dirtbag that pulled it off.
Right, and you know, the idea that this dirtbag does this deed, there is no accountability. He takes care of himself, if you will. And then you have de Blasio, the mayor, who has launched a war on police, and now all of a sudden saying, well, I really didn't mean it, and it's disrespectful to turn your back on me. Really, aren't we attacking the very institutions that keep us safe, Larry?
Yeah, and I think the mayor doesn't like the idea that ideas and words have consequences, and he was perceived by the police union and the members of the union of having been fomenting hatred, active hatred, against the police. And it seems to me that they're disrespecting him when they view him as having been a contributing factor, not the guy that pulled the trigger, clearly, but a contributing factor, somebody who might have actually encouraged the deed. Yeah, I would say turning their back on him is it's certainly understandable, and I'm not sure that that's the most that he deserves. It's a shame there's no form of impeachment available for a mayor in New York City.
Larry Pratt with us, Gun Owners of America. Kevin Miller in the morning here at 580 KIDO. Want to remind everybody it's very foggy out, so please be very careful. Larry, let's take a look at the president and his stance on the guns. Every time there's a tragedy like what we're hearing about in France and other places, you know, the president comes out and says, well, I tried. We've heard him threaten executive orders and having done so with the illegals. Could he make a move on guns?
Well, to a certain extent, he has already. An Operation Choke Point that he set up was designed to use some of the financial regulatory agencies of the federal government to put a choke on, if you will, the firearms industry. Namely, gun stores are having a very difficult time, sometimes simply can't get loans from their banks. We got a call maybe about a month ago from a store owner. He had just gotten his business started. He had everything set, ready to go, needed an inventory loan so he could buy a bunch of guns and offer them for sale in the store. And the bank told him, you're not going to be able to get a loan because of the kind of business you're in. So they didn't even have some subterfuge that he wasn't sufficiently capitalized or blah, blah, blah. It's because of the business you're in. And there's maybe a dozen or so businesses that are in this dangerous category invented by the federal government. And that's how it's working out. And it's the hope of the administration, obviously, is having a choke point, cutting off the flow of needed operating loans to the firearms industry, particularly the retail end of it. Then you choke off the supply of guns. And the president knows he's not going to get anything through the Congress, but he's a resourceful fellow, and he's doing everything that his mentors Cloward and Piven at Columbia University were telling him, sort of applied Saul Alinsky. This is how you bring the system down. You make it so that it can't operate anymore until it collapses, and that provides the moment for the communist revolution.
Let me hit you with this here. By the way, Larry Pratt with us if you have a question, 580-5436. He is with Gun Owners of America. What about the move on ammunition to tax ammunition, to price it out of existence? So, hey, you can buy as many weapons as you want, but you're not going to be able to use those weapons because there won't be any ammo.
Well, I don't see them getting a tax through at the federal level, but I I do see something that's a little bit more indirect but equally difficult for the consumer of ammunition in the private market, and that is that because the federal government has such an enormous, cancerous growth of federal police agencies, the Department of Homeland Insecurity alone has over 100,000 badge-wearing, gun-toting agents, and that's just one department, 100,000. Well, assuming routine target practice, my friend, that's a lot of ammunition, and that's put an enormous pressure on the market. And for a while, it was almost impossible for people to get ammunition, and at least the last time I tried to see if I could get some 22 for some of my grandchildren, not available.
Yeah, it was really, it was, everybody was speculating on that. It was a hotter stock than gold.
I have a bumper sticker on my desk that says lead, the other precious metal.
Larry, we continue on here at 580 KIDO. You've been to Idaho. You've spoken here. How do you view the gem state as far as, you know, being, friendly towards the guns?
Well, it's a state where I think people overall really appreciate having firearms, and I think they, a lot of them understand why we have them as a tangible way of making sure that the government stays within its bounds, so that if it were to forget those bounds, then it can be held in check. We saw there's a movie called The Battle of Athens about an episode in 1946 in Athens, Tennessee, where a bunch of corrupt politicians had taken over the town of Athens, and returning veterans decided they were going to do something about it and formed a, if you will, a kind of pickup militia and drove the corrupt politicians out of town armed. There as actually was a brief gun battle. And if you see the last, I don't know, 15, 20 minutes of the movie, you see all this rather dramatically portrayed. Hollywood made a movie of this actual historical event. More recently, there was a standoff in Bunkerville, Nevada, where the Bureau of Land Management, ostensibly to collect fees that hadn't been paid by a rancher grazing his cattle on federal lands, which shouldn't be federal lands, we might add, was faced with armed SWAT teams from the Bureau of Land Management. Why the Bureau of Land Management should exist, A, and B, should have police powers, where you don't see that in the Constitution, beats me. But there they were with lots of machine guns and black battle clothing. And eventually, the feds had to stand down. It was interesting. I was invited to go to a news conference at the ranch by the head of Oath Keepers, who had been one of the key fellows organizing the people coming to the ranch to protect Clive and Bundy, the rancher. And Saturday morning in my car, I get a call from Stuart Rhodes of Oath Keepers saying, well, we've canceled the Monday news conference. I said, what? I said, yeah, the feds have gone. Nobody's here. The ranch is now back to normal. And that's that was an amazing display of the Second Amendment right there. And by the way, very dramatic moment. Just not long before I had gotten that call, unarmed ranchers, men and women, had been riding toward the corral where the cattle had been penned up to set them free, and armed BLM agents had fingers on triggers, guns trained on those ranchers. And the sheriff of the county was feckless, but happily one of his deputies went up to the BLM and said, do you guys want to be known as the folks that gunned down unarmed men and women? And that seemed to awaken a conscience in those folks, and they rode away. And that's when I got the phone call, don't come out. But that was the Second Amendment. That's what it's intended to do. And to my great surprise, perhaps, America's still alive.
Well, and you know, and Clive and Bundy says one thing that's politically inappropriate, and he's vilified for that. Larry Pratt, please stand by, our great friend from Gun Owners of America.
Getting more done before sunrise than anyone. Kevin Miller in the morning. on 580 KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Kevin Miller in the morning, 580 KIDO. Phone number is 580-5436, 580-KIDO. We urge you to go to our website, 580KIDO.com. We'll be talking about this coming up. Did Congressman Labrador make the right move by voting for Speaker John Boehner? Larry Pratt with us now, Gun Owners of America. What do you make of the vibe, the grassroots versus the establishment? Where do the gun owners side on this? You're a nonpartisan group.
We had urged the defeat of Boehner. There were certainly others that were putting themselves forward. Daniel Webster became the principal recipient of opposition votes, and then there were a scattering of other people that got other members that got votes from dissident members of the House. But the takeaway, I guess, from what happened yesterday is that John Boehner is the first Speaker of the House in almost 100 years to have this kind of open dissent at his tenure. People are not satisfied in his caucus. They're not satisfied with him acting more like a Democrat than with the party that was brought in on a wave of popular revulsion to what has been going on here in Washington. People don't want business as usual, and a lot of people are going to view the reelection of Boehner as the Republicans saying, business as usual. That's really not very acceptable, and I think there's going to be consequences. The early warning system that may have been ignored was the defeat of Eric Cantor, the number two Republican in the House, by David Bratt, a guy that came out of nowhere, a professor in the suburbs of Richmond, and took out Eric Cantor. That is something that conceivably could happen in other primaries this coming election cycle in 16. The idea that all is well and we can continue with the current management, really? This is the management that voted to fund the anti-gun amnesty decree that is going to put on a fairly fast track millions of illegal aliens in this country to make it where they can have a vote in our elections. This means that they can, all they have to do under the terms of this executive order is to go to Canada, come right back. That puts them on track for a green card. And, of course, once you've got the green card, you're on track to be a citizen. And as a citizen, you can vote. Polling has indicated that 85% of these illegals are going to be Democrat anti-gun voters. Naturally, if they're willing to break the law, they're probably not great respecters of our traditions and our institutions and our Constitution, come from countries where there's no understanding of the precious heritage that we have as American free men. And so I think it's a very dangerous track that the Republican Party has put itself on. And the reelection of John Boehner, and unhappily Mr. Labrador's support of that, indicate that they're not sufficiently alarmed with the peril in which we find our country.
Well, there's an arrogance of having power, and we'll talk about it a little later, where Boehner is going to punish the people that voted against him. But, Larry, if your constituency told you to do something, chances are, if it was the right thing, you'd do it, yet you have over 60% of the Republicans, grassroots, people in the country saying Boehner's got to go, and their representatives went with Boehner.
Hopefully, if these members of Congress are indeed retaliated against by Boehner, they're most likely to be taken off committees. Some, a couple of them have already been so removed. And that's going to actually free them. That's going to mean that A, Boehner won't have anything else he can take away from them because he's taken away that which he can. And B, they're going to be free to organize and to agitate and to try to bring some reason to the Republican caucus that we didn't get sent here for business as usual.
Larry Pratt, if people want to get a hold of you for a good time, what can they do?
go to gunowners.org on the web. If you go to gunowners.org, you can sign up for our legislative bulletins, the alerts that we send out. We were advising people about this very vote earlier this week so that people were able to contact their members of Congress and say, don't do it. And we failed on this one, but other times it's made the difference in success. So if you want to be kept up to date, we'll embed email in those alerts. Go to gunowners.org and sign up.
Larry, take care. We appreciate it, sir.
Thanks so much, Kevin.
All right, our great friend Larry Pratt with us. And like I said, Larry's been at this for many, many years. Me, this is my 20th year in this format, in talk radio, the only format that I've done. And it's always nice to see people that have had that continuity, that consistency, certainly when it comes to something so important as the Second Amendment. Coming up next, a couple things. If you want to jump on the education bandwagon, we have the newly appointed or not elected or appointed, elected, not appointed, State School Superintendent Sherry Ivar made her big statements yesterday. And did she say anything? And was anybody listening? And does that impact your kids and what they're taught in school? Or do you already miss Tom Luna? And by the way, let me be the first to say it, you won't have Tom Luna to kick around anymore. And more on the shooting in France. Apparently, the shooters were yelling, Allah Akbar, Allah Akbar. And this was, what, a week after they ran a satirical cartoon about the Prophet Muhammad? All of a sudden, 12 people are dead in this attack. A satirical newspaper runs something that many in this country would think that it would be okay because there's freedom of the press. Well, not so much in the radical Mujahideen world. They ran a cartoon, tweeted ISIS joke an hour before the attack, and the attackers yelling, Allahu Akbar, we have avenged the Prophet. Do we have any idea what we're up against? You're listening to Kevin Miller, 580KIDO.
John Hannity, weekdays at 3. Now, back to Kevin Miller on 580KIDO, Idaho's first radio station.
Men, 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 manly men, 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 manly men, men, men,
men.
Good morning. Welcome to Thursday, 580KIDO. Kevin Miller in the morning as we get ready to start your day. Dave Burnett, still some more fog, but allegedly it will go away.
Well, it did. You know, it was funny. Downtown Boise yesterday, about 1, 2 o'clock in the afternoon here, I went out of the building, and it was brilliant sunshine downtown. I was like, wow. So I called my wife, who works over in the Meridian area, and she said, oh, no, it's socked in here, nothing. So yeah. I guess it all depends on where you're at.
Yeah, on Eagle Road, it was really bad yesterday. 1 or 2 in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Star, horrible, around 3.
And then this morning, it was funny, at my house, I stepped out and went, did it snow? I mean, the ground was completely covered white. They made the tracks, and it was just, you know, that kind of fog snow that was out there yesterday.
Yeah.
Or this morning.
Down the road from your house, no snow at my house.
Yeah. And then in the parking lot here, it's white.
Hmm.
So, you know, it's that bizarre time of year.
By the way, when you're done with everything and you get a minute, I need you to come in here for a minute.
Why? Is there something to see?
Well, remember, you know, yeah, you know, just having some issues. So
okay. I could fix it.
When you're not fishing, you're not fixing the fly fishing there.
I know. I was watching Larry Gebert, of course, does the weather here. He's out at the big fly fishing expo.
And you're all excited about that. You wanted to invite me to go fly fishing with you.
Yes. See, I think it'd be fantastic. In fact, maybe we should put that Randy, who is one of the crack salesmen here, too. He's a big fisherman. He and I have talked about getting you out to go fishing. And I think listeners should weigh in. If you want us to get Kevin to go fishing, send Kevin an email just to encourage him.
I can tell you where that's going.
Post it on Facebook.
I'll tell you where that's going. Absolutely nowhere.
What, that nobody would want you to go fishing?
I have no desire to do that. And it's funny because, you know, you have to buy into something. I'm just happy the way I am. And,
see,
you know,
people
need to accept me.
Oh, you land into a big fish. I'm going to get it.
For who I am.
I'm going to post it on Facebook, you reeling in a fish.
Yeah.
And act like a scared little kid. I don't want to touch it. That'd be fun. Wouldn't that be fun?
No.
Okay. I just think it'd be fun.
Not my cup of tea.
All right.
You got to be authentic. You got to be credible. You can't be a phony. Now, you love that stuff. Me, not so much.
First time I ever did it, I didn't know. And then I did it, and I was like, wow, that's awesome.
Hmm.
Have you ever had something you did for the first time and liked it?
Well, look, I'm 46 years old, soon to be 47. I'm good, Dave. I'm
no,
good.
You need to go fishing with us.
Yeah, okay. Appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Then you'd be tying flies like me.
Yeah. Well, look, there's nothing wrong with that. You know, you got to have something to fall back on.
Everybody's got to be something.
You know, like my boy in The Wire who's creating dollhouse furniture.
That's kind of unique.
Yep. My boy in The Wire, that's what he was doing when they put him down to motor pool.
That's kind of unique.
See, you're talking about things that people can relate to. I'm talking about my actual life, watching The Wire. Anyway, this is getting to be a real award winner. So, if you go to, I'll just do my personal Facebook page because this has something to do with sports. I did a blog about a couple guys in Arizona that are still angry and still upset about Boise State beating them. In fact, they do a video thing, and it's sponsored by Albertsons, and they had some unkind comments to say about the Broncos. In fact, we'll get to those in a minute, but you know, part of what they said is that if they played 9 out of 10 times, Arizona would beat Boise State.
Maybe.
And it wouldn't even be pretty. What do you mean, maybe? I thought that you would be, coming to Boise State's defense. So you agree with that comment?
Yeah, if you play 9 out of 10, that... What did exactly say again? That Arizona might beat
Boise? No, not might.
Oh.
Would.
Would beat 9 out of 10 times? I don't know.
Because they're that much of a better team than Boise State. In fact, they point out that in the third quarter of the Fiesta Bowl, Boise State only had 2 yards.
And Arizona State lit it up.
I'm just saying.
Not in that quarter, yeah. Oh, people are going to be bitter. They're going to whine.
Well, let's get to this here and take a listen to this thing. Okay. Of course, we're having some issues here, but we won't yap about it too much at 580-5436, 580-KIDO. You've got some writers there that are very upset about this. And, you know, like I said, most of us have moved on. And we'd love for the video to move on here, but unfortunately...
It's not going to work?
Well, let's see. You know, it's this real-time stuff. Who needs real-time here? By the way, 544, still foggy out. Please be very careful here. And we should have this thing rolling. Well, maybe not. Okay, here we go. A little creative music.
That's nice. A little samba.
See you dancing.
Welcome to Greg Hansen's Video Notebook, brought to you by Albertsons, and Happy New Year. I'm Star Sports Editor Ryan Finley, joined by Greg Hansen. Greg, over the holidays, lots of sports to talk about. Let's start with the Fiesta Bowl. Arizona loses to Boise State 38-30. Made it a game at the end, was driving at the end, could not get over a horrible first half. What did you make of that game?
I think the average fan, the U of A fan, watching that game by now, digesting it as long as they have, realizes that they would have beaten Boise 9 out of 10 times. Mm-hmm. That was the one time they weren't going to beat them. Uh-huh. And it was an abomination.
An abomination?
That's what I said. That first half was so bad. How could a Pac-12 team play like that?
That's true. But, you know, Boise State, there's something to be said for teams coming from a non-Power 5 conference on national TV in a big pro stadium on a big day. They pulled out all the stops. I mean, they ran a dang Statue of Liberty play. They ran a double pass. They threw downfield to a guy who I had never heard of in Jordan Spurbeck. I mean, this is a team that came out playing to win instead of playing to...
You're laughing.
Yeah, evidently Greg Hansen knows every receiver in college football.
Well, it gets even better.
That's good.
And I think that that's an important point.
Why didn't Arizona come out like that?
Yeah.
Why didn't Arizona come out emptying the vault against those guys? Because they knew that's what those guys would do.
Right.
It just, to me, it was sickening almost. Not because you're living in Tucson or anything, just sickening to see that opportunity go up in smoke.
Well, and it's not often that Arizona is the bad guy in a bowl game. I mean, I think that if you live outside the state of Arizona and have no affiliation, you're rooting like heck for Boise State, because Boise State comes out, not only are they the underdog from a small conference, they come out and win you over almost immediately with the way they play.
Yeah, and Arizona could have matched that. Yeah. In the second half, Arizona so thoroughly dominated them. Mm-hmm. 2 yards in the third quarter for Boise State. That's an indication of the difference in the rosters, I thought. Right. But it was too late.
Right. 2 yards, by the way, is the difference between us and the camera.
I know.
That's crazy. Anu Solomon, I think.
So your reaction to that, Dave Burnett?
Evidently, if you're behind in the third quarter, it's too late. So we should only play a half. I mean, Kevin, it was just too late. Third quarter didn't help, too late. I don't know what happened.
I found their comments refreshing.
Did you? What was refreshing?
Because we very rarely get the other team's perspective.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes people will talk to, like, the guy that does the announcing, you know, the play-by-play guy or whatever, uh-huh, from the other team, and they're kind of politically correct. They're like a diplomat, an ambassador for the school or the team. It's very rarely you get a columnist that will say those things. To me, I do I agree with them? No. I mean, what happened on the field happened on the field. And, you know, I don't drink the blue Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, you can't take it away from them. And yet this gentleman seems to think that if it were played again and again, again, if you're a Pac-12 team, if you beat the unbeatable and the Oregon Ducks, you should have shown up, and they didn't.
Exactly. See, I don't know who Greg Hansen is. Evidently, he has a blog or a website or a podcast or something. So, by the way, Albertsons might want to get that too. Might want to send that to the Albertsons marketing department. But, you know what? I mean, I don't know that he has any more credibility than I do, which is right down near none. I mean, seriously, the guy has a podcast? Why don't you have a national cast? Why aren't you on Fox Sports 1 or something?
Well, he's a big deal in Arizona.
Oh, okay. There you go. That's like I'm a big deal in this room.
Well, when it comes to fly fishing, you are.
Evidently. But, you know,
maybe we should invite him to go fly fishing with you.
Would Arizona beat Boise State 9 times out of 10? Maybe. But I guess we'd have to put him on the field and find out, wouldn't we?
Well, it just seems like it's sour grapes.
Because, after all, they held him to 2 yards in the third quarter, but it was too late. What does that mean? You should have won because of that.
Well, I did say that if Arizona had a quarterback, it would have been a different game. But you can say that for anything. I mean, really,
sure.
I mean, in reality, that's just an excuse.
It is. I mean, the bottom line is your team went out there, got out coached, got out played this time. You know, next time might be a different story. And you got beat. Call it good. You don't get a ring.
No, you don't win the Fiesta Bowl.
Nope, you don't get a ring. You don't get to hold the diamond-crusted football. And let's see. Yep, Oklahoma can say the same thing. TCU can say the same thing. You know, and Boise State may turn around and get beaten in the next one.
Right.
That's why they play the game. And to sit and cry and whine about it, well, you know what? You got beat this time.
I just wish they'd go somewhere else.
Boise State?
Yeah, although Old Town Scottsdale is pretty nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, if they make it in next time, they will. They'll go to, I believe, Texas. They'll go to the Cotton Bowl? Yeah.
Well, the old Cotton Bowl, yeah. It's the Jerry Bowl or whatever you want.
Yeah, because what they do is they move now that the non-five power, that bowl invite moves year to year.
Right.
So if Boise State goes and does it this coming year, but that's a whole big question there, what happens there. But if they, you know, win the bowl bid this year, then they would probably, I think it's the Cotton Bowl they'd be invited to.
Hmm.
I think that's the way it works. And then the next year would be like the Sugar Bowl, and the next year would be the Rose Bowl, and the next year would be whatever. But, you know, that all depends. They come out and they play Washington first game, and then they have BYU on a schedule, and then not a whole lot else.
You go back to Washington there with Coach Pete. How do you see that game playing out?
Boise State and Washington?
Mm-hmm.
I think
here.
Yeah, played right here on the blue turf, which I'll be honest with you, I thought you'd see it canceled because, you know.
Is it still possible to cancel it? If they'd probably have to do it by February, right?
I would think so. I think it'd be tough to cancel now, but I was real surprised that they play it. But it'll be, I mean, it'll be, you and I will be talking about it, God willing, if we're all still here and the creeks don't rise. You know, we'll be talking about it. It'll be fodder for the newspaper and the TVs that Coach Pete's coming back. And you have people all, oh, we're going to teach Coach Pete a lesson for leaving us. And then.
Well, you were friends with Coach Pete.
Yeah. And then he'll come out on the blue turf. He'll get a standing ovation for coming back. The whistle will blow. They'll kick the ball off, and all bets are off. And then Boise State will try to beat the Huskies on the blue.
Right.
And how it'll turn out? Don't know. We'll find out. It could be 2 yards in the third quarter, but that may be too late.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm looking forward to it. It'll be a good game, but the truth is the rest of the schedule, okay. BYU will be a good game. It's down there in Utah. But the rest of the schedule, pumped up and goofy for Hawaii to come to town.
Yeah, Norm Chow. Well, you know, and his mom lives here.
Yeah.
I guess his mom and his brother, yeah. All the places.
So that'll be good. But, yeah, so it's kind of interesting. Kind of interesting to watch and see. But, yeah, I mean, you know, Alabama, you could sit and do a blog and go, well, if it wouldn't have been for this. Well, no, the bottom line is Alabama got beat.
Now, you have heard me yap about the SEC for as long as I've been here.
Mm-hmm.
Have I really ever made an excuse when Alabama loses?
Nope, not once.
Yeah, I just sit there and go, look.
They got beat.
They did. And if Urban Meyer beats Oregon, then I agree with you. He is the coach of the year.
Yeah, I think he is anyway. Even if Oregon beats him, I think Urban Meyer's still the coach of the year because he's taken, you know, a third-string quarterback and won with it. That's not easy to do. I mean, that third-string quarterback in college is still going to be very good. It's not like your third stringer in the NFL who's just a guy on the roster. You know, a third-string quarterback in college is inexperienced, but still pretty good. You recruited him.
Let me hit you with this real quick. How do you see that game playing out, though?
Oregon and Ohio State? Mm-hmm. I think Oregon's going to be just if Oregon's hitting on all eight cylinders the way they were in the last game, it's just going to be too much. They'll run over Ohio State. It'll be a high-scoring game either way.
Now, Sports Illustrated says 45-41.
Yeah.
Orgeron, or Scorgon, as I call him now.
Yeah, I would take 80 points or over in that game scored.
I heard my buddy and I, we were laughing, go, who's going to score over 70 when Oregon played Florida State? I go, dude, I'd take the under. And then after the third quarter, I'm going, glad I didn't bet on that one. I don't bet on games for obvious reasons. But
Yeah, well, you know, gambling is difficult. If you know, that's one thing, but gambling, it's tough. To say, and they may come out and we may be stunned. It may be 13-12. I mean, you don't know.
That would be a stunner.
I do know this. Your traffic now. We are working one.